We're so pleased to welcome a brand new member of the For the People family this morning. We may have talked to them long, long ago, but I was reminded recently that a national organization tied to a very little-known genetic syndrome has its home right here in Connecticut. I'm talking about the Cornelia de Lange Syndrome Foundation. They're out to work in establishing community, educating families, and enabling advocacy. They provide a host of services for anyone touched by this little-known genetic syndrome and other isolating conditions. We're pleased to welcome their executive director, Bonnie Royster, to the program. And we've also got a couple of special guests, Michelle Taggart and Alexandra, respectively, respectively mother and sister of Dylan, who we'll be talking about, who is impacted by Cornelia de Lange syndrome. So lots to learn about today about this little known condition and their venerable home office and the great work that they're doing around the country right here out of Avon, Connecticut. So welcome, everybody. We will get off to the conversation once we remind people that the Connecticut Insurance Department recently launched an online consumer information center, a comprehensive resource designed to empower residents with information to help them better understand and navigate their insurance coverage and make informed decisions about the protection they need. The Consumer Information Center brings together interactive tools and key resources across major lines of insurance, including health, auto, homeowners, long-term care, life insurance, and annuities, and the all-important flood insurance. If you'd like to learn more about how this site can be helpful to you, just visit portal.ct.gov/CID/Consumer Information Center. All right, let's talk to our guests this morning. Michelle and Alexandra, welcome. Thank you for your work in advocacy for helping other folks learn about this situation. We're going to kick it off with Bonnie Royster, their executive director at the foundation. Bonnie, thank you for joining us this morning. Let's get into starting with the education piece and about CDLS.
Sure, I'd be happy to. For your listeners who might not know what CDLS is, you did a great job of pronouncing it. It's Cornelia de Lange syndrome, and we just say CDLS for short. But it is a rare genetic condition. It's present at birth. The parents didn't do anything to cause it, which is so comforting when they hear this because it just sort of happens spontaneously. But it does affect multiple body systems and developmental and behavioral and particularly GI are aspects of the syndrome for almost every family. Of course, though, in spite of this, every child is different. It's not a one-size-fits-all condition. We call it a spectrum. But the experience for many families is that they often feel very overwhelmed and isolated. I mean, you can just imagine having any condition and you go to the doctor and they kind of know what it is. They know how to treat it. But if you have something like this, most doctors never even heard of it. So you're there with a child and you're going to the doctor and they don't know what you're talking about. You can just imagine the impact of that kind of isolation. So that's, you know, a little bit about the diagnosis and kind of what the parents go through. And yeah. I really, it was just such of the iceberg there.
Well, let me check you there, Bonnie. Just for now, you know, when parents hear interviews like this and they hear that, you know, at some point their child may be affected in some way with a health issue and they go to the doctor and the doctor and the team pokes around and tries to determine exactly what's going on. You know, they start to worry that it might be something that is rare like CDLS. And for the sake of folks listening, what is the proportion of children kind of who are diagnosed to the extent that you can pin it? What is the percentage of children who are impacted by CDLS?
Well, I think I hear a couple of questions in there. One is prevalence. So we estimate about 1 in 10,000 children will be diagnosed with CDLS.
Yeah.
And with the size of the U.S. population, we think that there's probably about 34, maybe 35,000 children in the United States who have CDLS. So that's pretty small compared to, say, when you think about the overall population. And even though it's small for CDLS, rare disease as collectively, I'm only talking about CDLS.
Sure.
There's millions of people with various conditions that are considered rare.
Yes.
So that's the answer to the prevalence question. But the diagnosis question is a little bit different because the average journey of a child with CDLS, it can take anywhere from 5 to 7 years to even be diagnosed because it's not obvious that that's what it is.
So then the parents have already or the caregivers have already started the dance, so to speak, if you know what I mean, with the medical community.
Yes.
Their child is presenting with symptoms that you know and that Michelle and Alexandra and Dylan know are inherent in CDLS. At what point should a parent suggest to a medical provider, hey, maybe we should screen or test the child for CDLS, if for nothing more than to rule it out? Are there some really prevalent symptoms that would at least trigger a medical professional to consider running these screenings?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I actually think the number one thing that I've heard parents say is a term called failure to thrive, because many of the children don't, their digestive system is problematic. So they don't eat, or they have to be fed through G-tube. And so you can imagine if you're trying to feed them regular food and then suddenly, you know, there's a problem, you don't automatically associate that with a genetic disorder.
Mm.
However, it is pretty common. If you look up failure to thrive, CDLS will come up. So that's one of the ways.
And does that begin to manifest, you know, shortly after birth? Or do the digestive difficulties begin to manifest, you know, between 1 and 3 years old? Or is it birth to three? When is the prime time for diagnosis?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things. Diagnosis itself, you know, on average about 5 to 7 years, but the symptoms can happen right at birth.
Mm.
You can start to notice something is wrong. The child is not sucking, or they're not able to keep food down. You know, you just, these are the kinds of things you notice.
Okay. Is it becoming more widely accepted in the general medical community that if a parent or a caregiver or a patient requests some sort of screening or testing, and I guess, what is it? Is it a screening? Is it a testing? Is the medical community becoming more receptive as organizations like yours do programs like this to put the education out to the entire community, including medical professionals?
Well, there's a couple of ways I would answer that question. It's pretty standard to get genetic testing these days when a child is still in the uterus.
Yes.
There's certain things that happen. So sometimes if they have CDLS on the panel, it'll come up.
Oh,
other
okay.
times, you know, so that's sort of one way.
Well, that's important. That's great.
And we just got to, yeah, and but it's not consistently, it's not everywhere,
sure.
But it is on some.
Right,
so that
right.
that is how it comes up. But we did have a call from a mom about 2 weeks ago, and it just kind of blew us away. The mom and the dad were in the hospital, and they got a diagnosis of CDLS, and the child wasn't even born yet.
Mm.
So they had all kind of questions. They didn't know what it was. And I, even though they were sad, I was clapping because I thought, oh, my goodness, they know right away.
Right.
They don't have to wait. they can, you know, intervene and have good care right from the beginning.
Sure, because I imagine an undiagnosed baby, once they endure up to, you know, 6 months, 12 months, 18 months old, it begins to have a ripple effect across the entire health spectrum of that child.
Exactly. And I think another hopeful sign, I think there's a bill being brought before Congress. I forget the name of it, but I want to say it's the Genomic Act. Mm-hmm. And part of that bill is to make it affordable for parents, you know, to get free genetic testing across the country.
Okay.
And I think that is a very positive development, and we've asked our parents to write their senators to support it.
Okay. So. And that's part of the advocacy piece of the work that the foundation does. Let us know a little bit more about how the foundation takes all of the goodwill and the donations and the grants and such and delivers direct services to parents and families.
I think one of the things that I'm most proud of is if you just find out that your child has CDLS, a lot of times it's a deer in the headlights look. I have no idea what this means. You know, people go to Google and get terrified.
Sure.
But then when they call us and they hear a warm voice on the other end who's well aware of what CDLS is, how to talk them through the different stages, connecting them with a warm community who really understands in a way that no one else understands what it is to live the life of a parent or caretaker or sibling of someone with CDLS. And I personally think our biggest value is our ability to convene, not just the parents, but also the medical community, also advocates. We bring all these people together on behalf of somebody living with CDLS.
Mm. Well, as we have done today, and I thank you, Bonnie Royster, Executive Director for the Cornelia de Lange Syndrome here in Connecticut, the national organization based right here in the Nutmeg State, up in the Hartford area. We've got a couple of CDLS heroes on the line, Michelle Taggart, whose son's Dylan was diagnosed with CDLS, and his sister, Alexandra, who was inspired by Dylan's journey and is now a student at Quinnipiac University, going to work and planning to be a professional in the field that might lend support to individuals like her brother. Thank you guys for being on the program. Bonnie, Michelle, let's start out with your story. At what point in Dylan's young life were you able to attain a diagnosis, and were you one of those parents who had to endure that incessant, you know, poking to figure it out?
Yes, thank you for having us. So we are very fortunate with Dylan's story. Everything just kind of fell in place. He had a normal delivery and we didn't think anything was wrong. But after he was born, he started having breathing difficulties. So on, you know, the second day of life, he was transferred to Westchester Hospital, into their NICU. And that's where, you know, that's where he was poked and prodded by all the different doctors. And, you know, we were reassured right away, you know, we're a teaching hospital. Please don't worry. They're just, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. And a geneticist came and, you know, did his evaluations and took lots of pictures of him. And as Bonnie was saying, there's a lot of similar prominent features that children with CDLS have. And he had them all. He had prominent facial features, thin eyebrows that met in the middle, long eyelashes. He had a short upturned nose, a high arch palate, a very small chin, his fingers. He had the incurved fifth finger, very small extremities, and a sacral dimple. So those were, you know, very common features that this doctor was picking apart. And we were clinically diagnosed with all of those features when he was 5 months old.
Okay.
We were lucky that he was only in the hospital for a week, and he was discharged on just two medications, one for helping his lungs develop, and the other was the reflux medicine. So, you know, the gastro involvement, which is what Bonnie was talking about, that that he was on for, you know, several years. The caffeine for his lungs, he was only on for a few months. His lungs developed nicely. It was the gastro symptoms that kind of are his biggest difficulty, I guess, throughout the years of, you know, his 18 years. We went off the reflux medication probably after, you know, maybe 6-7 years. But he does, one of his biggest thing is constipation due to low motility in the intestines. It just, you know, his body just does not function as, you know, normal. So it's a little bit of a slower, you know, process for him. So that's his biggest medical complication, I would say. So we're very lucky.
Yep.
Bonnie mentioned, you know, the spectrum. He's, you know, on the lower side of the spectrum. He has all his limbs. They are smaller than, you know, normal, but he does have his limbs. He's able to eat on his own. He's never had a tube. You know, he's never been tube fed.
Now, did Dylan, developmentally delayed?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, I'm sorry. No. Please continue.
No, I was just going to say, so, you know, one of the things is the developmental delays, intellectual delays. So that's, you know, kind of holds him back.
Okay.
It took him much longer to, you know, crawl, to walk, to feed himself, those types of things.
So did Dylan come home to Sister Alexandra, or did Alexandra come home after Dylan?
Allie's older. She was 3 years old. Yeah, Allie's 3 years older than Dylan. So she was, you know, a little thing when he came home, and I'm sure didn't know much about it.
Sure.
Allie, if you want to kind of elaborate, you kind of figured things out.
Alexandra, I'm curious. Has essentially your brother provided you with, you know, your college level training going all the way back to, you know, when you were just beginning to help him out as a 4-, 5-, and 6-year-old?
Yeah, definitely. I would say that when Dylan was a lot younger, he was a little more vocal with me. We kind of had that typical sibling dynamic when we were younger. I was exposed to occupational therapy, which is my major, when I was young, because he would receive services at home. And that's kind of when I started getting introduced to these services that helped him. And that's really the main reason that I chose to go into OT here at Quinnipiac, because of him.
And not to create a commercial opportunity for Quinnipiac, but they are, somewhat elevated in the landscape of colleges that provide that type of programming, right?
Yes, absolutely. Quinnipiac has a really good occupational therapy program. I am in their Master's of Occupational Therapy program. We also have a doctorate program. We learn a lot about helping individuals, rare genetic disorders, although CDLS has never come up, so I do educate my peers and professors. Definitely.
Do you think, as a result of you being part of the program, you may have created your own benchmark, in that now you've created the personal and situational awareness for the teaching side of the equation to begin to discuss maybe a little bit more how to deal with things like CDLS and other rare conditions?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say, you know, having Dylan as my brother exposed me to that and how to work with individuals with differences and disabilities. I saw firsthand how OT can support individuals throughout their whole life. And what I love about it is that we kind of just look at someone as a whole person and not just their condition. So that's really why I love this area of the health field.
Excellent. Folks, if you're interested in learning more about the foundation and the condition, you can go to cdlsusa.org. You can find out how to donate, how to get involved, how to volunteer. And we're going to tell you about an event that's coming up in a few weeks that will give you an opportunity to kind of casually and informally go out and learn more about CDLS and the wonderful folks like we have on the program this morning and a number of others here in Connecticut. Bonnie, I'm going to go back to you for the last couple minutes. Let us know about the organization and other ways people might be able to help folks like the Taggarts and Dylan.
Sure. I think, as you said, just showing up for the walk is a big thing, just because the walk, it gives a chance for visibility, help us learn and spread awareness. Even a family, if you know someone, one of the things I hear parents say all the time is, you know, sometimes it's a little challenging to have a child that's different, and family members don't know what to do or how to help. So sometimes it's something as simple as go do a load of laundry to give them a break, or, you know, make a meal so they can kind of relax a little bit, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or obviously even just making a donation helps us to do that kind of work. So
yeah, but ultimately, we'd love to see people who heard this program show up and talk about it to you and Michelle and Alexandra at the Denise DeCenzo Foundation Walk to Fight Rare Diseases at Quinnipiac University. That effort will in part help the CDLS Foundation. When is that event?
That event should be April 25th. Michelle?
Yep, April 25th, and it's at the Quinnipiac University.
And I imagine maybe there's a Facebook site for it, as well as a web connection through the CDLS website. So if folks are interested in learning more, they can just they can search engine Denise DeCenzo Foundation Walk and find out all about it. And hopefully they will come out and talk a little bit about Cornelia de Lange syndrome. The CDLS Foundation is lucky to have advocates like Michelle Taggart and Alexandra, her daughter, who is now studying to be occupational therapist, Alexandra?
Yes.
Yes, at Quinnipiac University's master's program, in honor of and thanks to her wonderful brother, Dylan, who is living with CDLS. So I want to thank our guests, Bonnie Royster, who's executive director of the foundation, and Michelle and Alexandra for being part of the program this morning. Please go on out and learn more about CDLS, their foundation located right here in Connecticut and serving the national audience at cdlsusa.org. Folks, thanks so much for the education this morning and the conversation.
Thank